Good afternoon, Cree community. Thank you for tuning in to a new episode of the Living Minds podcast. For new listeners, this podcast is grounded in the concept of deep adaptation, which explores how we can psychologically transform to adapt to climate change and reconcile with our responsibility towards nature. With Elodie this week, we are happy to share with you an interview with Angela Biancofiore, with whom we've contemplated the law of impermanence and how it can help us make sense of COVID-19, climate change, and the Cree's digital future. We were introduced to Angela through Chloé Bramy, so Health Lab project coordinator here at Cree and PhD student, following our episode on compassion. So a bit on Angela. Angela is currently a professor of Italian studies at the University Paul Valéry Montpellier III and is a member of the LLACS laboratory, which stands for Langue, Littérature, Art et Culture des Sud. She co-founded the Center of Theories and Practices of Care of Montpellier, an international network of researchers to which several researchers from the CRI here have joined. She also co-organized the annual seminar on care and the environmental humanities in 2019-2020. So if you're curious to learn more about Angela's work, a full biography is linked to our podcast. So in our episode on compassion, we explored how we can adapt to eco-anxiety by being in touch with kindness within ourselves and towards others. Angela remarked when listening to this episode that eco-anxiety is also surmountable by meditating on the law of impermanence. This episode will therefore take you through our own contemplation on impermanence before sharing Angela's insights and research on questions that hope to ground impermanence in the political and professional context of our lives. We thank Chloé for making this connection and Angela for her time and contribution to this episode. We now begin with some contemplation.
Impermanence, what is it? Impermanence is, in the Buddhist philosophy, one of the three marks of existence. All phenomenal existence is said to have three interlocking characteristics: impermanence, suffering, and the lack of soul or essence. A lack of essence means that we are not a separate self. We are full of everything in the cosmos: the sunshine, the tree, the cloud, the earth, the minerals. We can recognize ourselves in other beings composed of similar elements. Impermanence is the ever-changing nature of life. Every moment that passes, you are changing, your body is using the food you ate as energy, your mind is welcoming new information, your cells age a bit. And the same goes for the earth. The sea erodes a little of the shoreline. The rocks turn into sand, that sand turns into mineral, that might become part of an algae, and so on. Change is movement, and movement is life. Your body is full of it. Try to stay still, and you can feel the blood moving 4 kilometers per hour, pulsating, keeping you from being utterly static. Refusing death would be refusing change. Refusing getting old, refusing to let yourself change, your mind, refusing to evolve. It would be refusing life itself. Death is a change. Your mind fades, you slowly turn to earth, dust, gas. Your body transforms into sustenance for other life form, you are still life. Whether we cling to them or not, cultures, traditions, friends, family and surrounding, they all change. They disappear, mix and evolve. The only way we can keep them a little longer is to remember them. But even memories are impermanent and changes at some point. and that change is beyond our control. Even if we have a clear image of what we want to be, the change we want to bring, there is no guarantee that it's going to happen. We can only contribute to it, add pieces of our vision through our action in it. Climate change is happening now. It's not set in the future, it's happening now. The future, on the other hand, will change, because things always change. We might, by our action, bring about a certain difference, where the ocean rises, where biomes continue to die as they are now, where the earth becomes unlivable for us. But maybe something will happen that transforms that for the worse or the better. The only certain thing is that the world we know of now will definitely mutate. So what kind of mutation will we see? What kind of new world do we want to see? Do we sit back and watch, letting ourselves get moved by the current? Do we try to put a dam in the river to control it? Do we become active actors of these changes? Do we row the boat while accepting that the current is the lead? To be passive in a changing world can be the result of being overwhelmed by the lack of grip we have on all the events taking place around us. It can also be the result of being comfortable in the present time by relying on the idea that things will never ever change. Shaping the world is a stance where we take power to mold and make the world in the image that we have of it. We want to fix it into the shape we envision because we think that is best, whether it is by repeated and energy-intensive effort or by violent and brute force. Contributing to the world is accepting that it changes independently of our vision. But we add to it. We try to positively affect it, to come closer to a compromise between our vision and everyone else's. We can be actors while also accepting the impermanent nature of life. We have to learn to be surprised by an imperfect outcome that might differ from what we expected, but can bring different positive aspects from our action.
In the context of COVID-19, how can we reconstruct our sense of the world through impermanence?
The COVID-19 pandemic has produced a sudden disruption in our lives. It is a sort of warning signal that breaks our ordinary life, our business as usual. In a sense, we can say that COVID-19 led us to expand our humility towards nature and to break the illusion of our control over nature. Pandemic and lockdown have favored the emergence of a new state of mind, a new awareness of our condition at different levels. Through this event, touching the whole earth, we have the opportunity to acquire a new insight, awakening us from psychic numbing. Psychic numbing, according to Robert Lifton, is a state of mind hindering us to clearly perceive the reality. For example, when we don't recognize our responsibility in climate change. The pandemic showed us the role of empathy, solidarity, and caring attitude. How many members of medical personnel die because of this virus? They die while providing health care to people severely affected by the virus. They gave their life while taking care of elderly persons or people fragilized by other forms of illness. Moreover, the pandemic has demonstrated that we can only survive through a set of values based on compassion, solidarity, and empathy. Many studies exploring the evolution of living beings on Earth show that natural selection is not the only factor. On the contrary, we discover that solidarity and empathy characterize the evolutionary process of living organisms. We can see the book by Peter Kropotkin, Mutual Aid, another book of Lynn Margulis, Symbiotic Planet, and more recently, the book of Franz De Waal, The Age of Empathy. The survival of living beings is not assured by the laws of the jungle, but rather by empathy, and we, in our body and mind, we are made for empathic relationships. Evidence can be found through the study of mirror neurons. We can understand that it is current to feel pain if we are facing a person who feels pain.
How do we mediate between our need to create the world we seek and the impermanent nature of existence?
In order to answer this question, it is worth to look deeply at impermanence. Firstly, I would like to quote Antoine Lavoisier, a scientist who lived in France in the 18th century. He said, "In nature, nothing is lost, nothing is created, everything is transformed." This is still the law of conservation of energy in physics. Unfortunately, he was guillotined in 1794. In fact, we are not a closed entity, but rather a current of energy and matter, ever-changing, a sensitive threshold through which the world experiences itself. We are a kind of eloquent nature, which means the nature can speak through us. We cannot understand impermanence only intellectually. We need to meditate on it in order to bring the awareness of impermanence in all cells of our body. In other words, we need to train our mind, cultivating calm of the body and the mind by sitting meditation, walking meditation, eating meditation, and working meditation. Overall, we need to learn mindful breathing. It is important for us to appreciate every single moment of our life, even in a very difficult situation. If we train the mind, we will be able to find a source of joy. Thanks to neuroplasticity, change is possible. This process is called, in Eastern tradition, cultivate the pure vision. It is not easy. Not everybody can easily touch this particular state of mind. To experience this simple state, we just have to open our eyes to see the color of flowers, to contemplate the deep blue of the sky. In every situation, we can rejoice and refresh ourselves. For example, I can learn how to orient my thoughts. Naturally, my mind notices what's wrong because of an instinct of survival. But if I'm not in danger, I don't need to focus my attention mainly on negative situations. That is why we need skillful means to face impermanence and a strong motivation to dedicate our energy and commitment to inner transformation.
How do we reconcile impermanence and responsibility to act?
Impermanence is intimately linked to interdependence. All phenomena interact in an interdependent co-arising. When I look at a plant, an animal, or a small insect, I realize that every single being exists only if related to the whole ecosystem and finally to the entire universe. When we look at a flower, we can see the non-flower elements that contribute to the manifestation of the flower: the rain, the soil, the bees, the sun, the wind. We can consider all the cosmos in a single flower, even though there is no sign of the sun or soil within the flower. Life is possible only if some specific causes and conditions are gathered for its manifestation. Like a candle, if there is oxygen, I can light the candle and the flame will appear. If not, the flame will blow out. The same applies to our existence. We manifest ourselves when all causes and conditions are there. Otherwise, we cannot stay alive. However, there is permanence within impermanence. We are the continuation of our ancestors, both biological and spiritual ancestors, and we will continue through our offspring. I mean, we will continue through our DNA, our thoughts, writings, habits, our knowledge, our laws, our artworks, and so on. In a sense, the generations to come will inherit a large part of our actual lives. There is a deep continuity among generations that makes me feel like an element of a chain in the web of life. For instance, the election of Barack Obama as US president was something unthinkable only 50 years ago, but the long struggle of several generations for the rights of Afro-American citizens and the development of mentality made it possible. Therefore, we are fully responsible for the future of the world and for next generations, which means that we interbeing between past, present, and future, between life and death, interbeing between old and new generations, between nature and culture, between people and nature. If we make the effort to look deeply without stopping at the appearances, then we will be able to see the unseen, to conceive the inconceivable.
What is impermanence in the context of the digital age toward a digital future and the digital world?
Machines are not neutral. They reflect human biases. So we can use machines produced with digital technologies in a mindful way. In other terms, I will choose the right moment and specific resources, coming from websites which can bring to me joy and interesting knowledge, a kind of wisdom-related knowledge. Digital resources is like food. I decide to nourish myself, my mind, with some kind of films, texts, books, websites, games, images. That is my free and conscious decision. That is the reason why I need to orient my attention. It is up to me not to be manipulated by the digital world and by the pressure of social networks. I will appreciate also the noble silence. That means I will take care of me in order not to be overwhelmed by big data. I will ensure that my researches will be a meaning-making activity within the global digital sphere. A conscious use of computers and other products of technologies will remind me that all these stuff are made of several materials coming from nature, as silica, aluminium, nickel, iron, copper, petroleum for plastic, lead, silver, gold, cobalt. Nowadays, digital world leads us to debate on extractivism, because we withdraw these materials from Mother Earth. On the other hand, digital world allows a worldwide communication. It is really wonderful to be able to speak with a friend living on the other side of the planet. Through websites, we also have the opportunity to debate on climate change, to create communities or movements, to find innovative solutions thanks to collective intelligence operating through social networks. Furthermore, digital technologies enable us to explore human brain and more broadly human bodies, for example, through fMRI, the functional magnetic resonance imaging. Yet we have to remember that digital world can trap human beings within a universe exclusively conceived for humans, so we risk to become even more distant from animals, plants, minerals, each different way to be Earth. Throughout the long history of our planet, humans lived in a constant co-evolution with other species. However, with digital technology, we risk breaking this conversation with the more than human world, following the thought of David Abram.
What is the ecology of mind? How can it relate to collective endeavors such as the SDGs?
Ecology of mind is an expression used by Gregory Bateson. According to him, modern science has to deal more with relationships than with objects. He intended to transform the logic of separateness between people and nature, subject and object. Separateness exists among various fields of knowledge. Globally, we can say that knowledge is one. Through the works of Francisco Varela and Thich Nhat Hanh, I would like to adapt the idea of ecology of mind to our times. For Thich Nhat Hanh, we can train our mind in order to build a serene relationship with reality. In doing this, we also try to decrease the sense of self and to acquire an other-oriented perspective. meditation on interbeing leads us to enhance our compassion for the world. Compassion is like a muscle. Therefore, it has to be trained. We can see on this topic the works of Tanya Singer and Richard Davidson. To build an ecology of mind, we need to develop resilience, welcoming all kinds of emotions, pleasant or unpleasant. We have the possibility to transform difficult emotions like compost in a garden. Actually, we are the gardener of our mind. This can make us more resilient, enhancing our capacity to recover from suffering. Because if we learn to suffer, we suffer less. A new ecology of mind is nourished by a new science of mind. A mind which is embedded in a specific ecosystem is embodied, steadily rooted into a physical body and enacted in a continuous cycle of action and perception. Within the frame of an ecology of mind, we aim at developing pure vision. In other terms, we understand the importance to cultivate gratitude in each moment of our life. This is also very good for our mental and physical health. We can see on this topic the study by Lobsang Tenzin Neji, Gael Desbordes, and Rebecca Shankland. Cultivate inner peace means respecting the unity of body and mind. We find rest through different practices. We underline the word practices here because a purely intellectual understanding, it is not enough to transform us. So there are individual practices with meditation, contemplation, visualization, walking meditation, Qigong or yoga, and so on, or collective practices like the work that reconnects, a kind of workshop conceived by Joanna Macy, focusing on our relationship with the living nature. Through these practices, we learn to rejoice of the present moment and to reduce the sense of dissatisfaction, that persistent feeling leading us to overconsumption and compulsive shopping. In order to attain inner peace, we need to cultivate a non-violent attitude towards ourselves, towards others, and each form of life. To adopt a non-violent attitude means as well to refuse killing other animals, respecting plants and minerals. When we eat an animal product, we might reflect on the precious gift of life. In reality, through ecology of mind, we try to introduce the shift from an ego system to an ecosystem in each moment of everyday life within the frame of an holistic vision. Moreover, we can expand our insight considering the life of deeply inspiring figures as Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King, or any other person, having a clear coherence between actions and thoughts. All these practices can sustain our inner and outer ecology in order to build a life-honoring civilization. Then we can make the world a more peaceful place to live, since peace in the world starts from peace in ourselves. Finally, we can say, the way out is in. Let me quote few verses from the Book of Hours by Rilke, translated by Joanna Macy. Let this darkness be a bell tower and you the bell. As you ring, what batters you becomes your strength. Move back and forth into the change.
Thank you so much, Angela, for this dive into impermanence. Thank you for sharing your living mind with us and the Cree community. Thank you all for listening. And if you haven't, you can check our previous podcasts. They are available on SoundCloud and PodCloud. Stay tuned for new podcasts, and I wish you all a pleasant day.
De l'eau, même s'il s'est